that courage to bite the hand that feeds him is sort of the hallmark of John the Baptist.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. This episode, we have Brandon Nappy, Executive Director of Leadership Programs at Berkeley Divinity School at Yale, and Ned Parker, Associate Dean for Institutional Advancement at Andover Newton Seminary at Yale. Both of them also hold the title Lecturer in Homiletics. They're discussing John chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, and verses 19 through 28, which is appointed for the third Sunday of Advent in year B. The text is read for you by student Sophie Beal.
John chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, and verses 19 through 28. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but he confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of the one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the strap of his sandal." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan where John was baptizing.
So Ned, when I read this passage about John the Baptist, I can't help but think of a recent experience I had at an indie rock concert of all places. I took my daughter to see Boy Genius, the supergroup Lucy Dacus, Julian Baker, and Phoebe Bridgers that's become quite a phenomenon as they tour over the last year. And as I learned more about this group in preparation to take my daughter to the concert, I learned that they each have a tattoo of a tooth on their body. And it's to remind them to be willing to bite the hand that feeds them. This image came to mind as I was thinking a lot about John the Baptist. This pact that the three members of the group made.
I'm so waiting to hear how you connect the dots here.
Well, they didn't want to be pressured by the recording industry. They didn't want to be pressured by their own fans. They wanted to stay true to their calling, even if it meant doing things that would undermine their success. And I think this is precisely what John the Baptist does. As a prophet in the tradition of Elijah and all the Hebrew prophets, he's willing to criticize everyone, even his own tradition, even the community from which he came, and that courage to bite the hand that feeds him is sort of the hallmark of John the Baptist. And he's out in the wilderness, and he's an equal opportunity criticizer because he has this mission to call people to alignment with the covenant. And when he sees religious leaders not living up to their commitments, he's going to call them out. When he sees the Roman government not living up to its commitments and acting unjustly, he calls them to account. It costs him his life. And I thought, gosh, I'm not nearly this courageous in my vocation. And I wonder if I could ever have a tooth tattooed on my body and make this kind of John the Baptist commitment.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I wonder who's being John the Baptist now. It seems like the church is going in so many different directions, and all of those connecting points are are really fascinating and makes me think about the John of this story and the church of, say, the 1950s, the thriving church. And John is clearly being John in this story, standing out, doing all the things that you named. And thinking about the church of today compared with the John the Baptist who's in prison, who says to Jesus, "Are you the one?" I mean, and it's, I read it as almost pleading, "Are you the one, or do we have to wait for another?" He's saying from this jail cell where he has lived his life doing all of this work and willing to bite that hand that feeds him, willing to stand up against the empire, even if that means, you know, eating locusts and honey and wearing what, camel hair, is that right? And to go out and make a straight path in the wilderness. So I know I'm kind of taking this in another direction, but I feel like these are parallel directions, because what happens with John in John's story as it unfolds feels like some sort of parallel with what's happening with the church at the moment. There is this very strong sense of self, strong sense of community in John's case, strong sense of self. And then there's a question, what is happening next? And there's mention of the wilderness and making the straight path in the wilderness. And we feel like a wilderness people right now. My sense is that there are fewer and fewer people in the church. I hope that we're changing this through educating clergy, but I feel like as the church shrinks, as seminaries and theological schools close, there are fewer and fewer people standing up and offering prophetic words like this. And that instead of finding the straight path in the wilderness, we're getting lost in the wilderness of fear, of worry about what's happening next, worry about enrollment, worry about how many people are sitting in pews. And when you get lost in the wilderness, you know, what do you do? I mean, I don't have an answer for that, but I grew up in Maine. The only answer I have is the answer that we were told growing up in Maine, which is if you get lost in the wilderness, you sit still, right? You stay in one place. But we can't do that. We have to move forward. And so who is going to be that voice? Who's going to step up? And I think the question I'd ask you is, in this case, given this context, given your story, does someone need to stand up and say to the capital C church, hold on a second, the capital C church who may, you know, be the hand that feeds them, whether it's through faith, through taking Holy Communion, I'm not sure, but someone who stands up and says, hold on a second, we were given a mandate to do a very specific thing. We call it Maundy Thursday, Mandatum Thursday, which is to love one another as I have loved you. So is, as you said, biting the hand that feeds you, is that standing up to the church in this moment?
Yeah, I have more questions than answers here, but I do believe that the path forward will be wild. Literally, we can only find it in the wilderness, right? This is where John made his home. The wilderness is a place to meet God. It's also a dangerous place. You could also meet your own death.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so isn't that the paradox, right? That we will need to meet our own death in some way. Like the parts of our structures, parts of our community, parts of our churches will actually need to die for us to be able to claim the new life and to really encounter what God is asking of us. And it will somehow be wild, because the wilderness is a place where God stretches our hearts and our minds in new ways. So I've always been uncomfortable with John, right? Both in his preaching and his, he's hardcore. He's sort of the punk.
Yeah.
He puts the punk in the gospel.
Yeah.
And this reading sort of calls me to really trust and be even more courageous. So it might mean embracing a church that I don't recognize, or a church that invites me to do things that I'm not currently doing. So I love John, but I'm a little scared of him, and I want to, this season, more deeply reflect on how kind of the John spirit, the wild spirit, can live in my own life.
Yeah, I mean, your reflection on recognizing that we are in a place where things might be dying, I feel like the voice crying out in the wilderness is the voice reminding Christians it requires resurrection, requires death by definition. Resurrection requires death. Don't be scared. We've been doing this a long time and we figured it out. And so that certainly stands out to me.
And it's a good reminder, right? That baptism is a death ritual. It's a ritual drowning, right? We make it pretty. We baptize babies. If you're in a community that baptizes babies and it's lovely and it's nice, this is a death ritual and a powerful one for us to reflect on.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't been there recently, check out the Yale Bible Study website at yalebiblestudy.org. We're always adding new content and resources there to help you study the Bible in your local context. Again, it's yalebiblestudy.org. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aidan Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer, Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.